Emotions are running high in Berlin this week. There's a heated debate triggered by comments made by the German foreign minister who went to Syria last week and commented on the difficult living conditions people face there. Johann Wadewul's comments seem to clash with his party's deportation plans. And now some in his own party are even questioning whether he's the right man for the job. Today we're giving you a full Berlin briefing on all of that. And I've got some great guests with me. Daniel Thum is on the line from Konstanz University, one of Germany's most renowned migration researchers. Thanks so much for being with us. And Eya Ibrahim is back on the podcast. You're obviously the head of DW Arabic TV News, and you've just come back from a reporting trip to Syria, so we can actually get your insights on what the situation on the ground is like there. And then to everybody following Berlin Briefing for a while, you're all familiar with Michaela Küfner, my colleague and fellow podcast host, who talks a lot to conservative politicians. In fact, that's the way you spend your working days. And also, Michaela, I have to say happy birthday to us. This is one year
of Berlin Briefing. Yeah, indeed.
Yeah. So that's great to have you all here. And before we get into the details, I really just would like to hear the initial reactions. Daniel, how are you perceiving the current debate that's going on?
The arrival of more than 1 million Syrians over the past 10 years has been a defining moment for German politics. So it's no surprise that sooner or later, after the fall of the Assad regime roughly one year ago, the debate would resurface. And this happened now with these comments of the foreign minister. And it also shows how nervous, especially conservative politicians are, because as listeners may know, the Alternative for Deutschland is doing very well in the opinion polls, and migration is a big topic for voters of the Alternative for Deutschland. So conservative politicians really want to prevent this party from becoming ever bigger.
And Eya, what's your reaction?
I was struck by the size that it suddenly took, because again, these comments were initially made by the foreign minister on a trip to Syria, standing in the midst of ruins. And, you know, for a casual observer, he was just describing the reality that he was seeing. Per se, there's nothing really wrong about that. But then to see the life it sort of took in political Berlin, I think on the one hand, it feels to me as someone who covers the region and works there with a lot of people there and have a lot of colleagues, you know, who are Syrian, it's somewhat removed from reality, from, you know, the country there, but also removed from the reality of what Germany's legal system even allows with some of these claims. And I'm sure we'll get into that.
We'll get into
so,
all of that.
So it really does feel like this very typical political phenomenon in which political Berlin and the political bubble here has managed to create an event out of something that maybe isn't as remarkable as one might think. But I think Daniel is absolutely right. It is a sensitive topic, and we are dealing with a chancellor who's, of course, trying to undo the legacy of the last chancellor from his party, Angela Merkel. And of course, 2015 and the coming of refugees from Syria, Iraq, and elsewhere were just a defining hallmark of her time. Yeah. And so it is a sensitive topic in politics as well.
And Michaela, can you just walk us through what has happened? What happened? Johann Wadewul was in Syria on Friday. What happened after that here in Berlin, just briefly? We'll listen to what Wadewul said exactly a bit later, but just give us the context.
Yeah, we made a conscious choice here not to have a semantic discussion about this, but actually there are some real concrete fears behind how he could be misconstrued. What he actually did is he walked through a completely destroyed suburb of Damascus, and he said that to a question, he answered that he really doesn't see how people can live here in dignity, and he really doesn't see it happening, that people return here.
Let's listen to what he said there.
I think at this point in time, it's only possible to a very limited extent, because indeed a great deal of the infrastructure in this country has been destroyed.
So a very limited extent of people returning, Syrians returning, bearing in mind that most of the more than a million people, Syrians who came here, have subsidiary protection. That means the reason they are legally in Germany was that there was an act of war. And that is no longer the case for now in Syria. We hope that continues. And the stance that the party also of Johan Vadeful is taking, that many Syrians should also return. So Johan Vadeful standing there and saying that he doesn't really see that happening was then interpreted as him contradicting the chancellor, who said, and also the policy of this coalition. This is also something that the conservatives who are in the lead in this coalition found difficult to discuss with the Social Democrats.
Their junior partner
in this coalition. And he was seen as someone who is now digressing also from a policy of deportations that we've already seen. We have an interior minister here who is making sure the media are present and in the know when people are deported, both to Syria but also to Afghanistan. This is a kind of a benchmark policy. And of course, this is making the point, look, migration is not the issue that will allow the far-right Alternative for Germany to grow on in the future. And there was a lot of dismay in his own party that neither the foreign ministry nor the chancellery, after this statement, came out and put it into a context, saying that, of course, it is not digressing from the policy. And, you know, depending on how long you listen to this and how you want to perceive it, you can interpret it either way as exactly what Aya said, a description of the situation there. But it was, I would personally also, having spoken to him before, and you've also spoken to him before, he is a very close ally of the German chancellor. He's completely signed up to the policy of this coalition. So this was an interpretation that then opened a discussion here in Germany, which very fast got very heated, which saw the chancellor then appear in the parliamentary group of the conservatives saying, I 100% stand with Johan Vadeful. It saw Johan Vadeful then also explain that situation again to MPs. And then he drew another comparison, saying that what he saw was the kind of scale of destruction worse than Germany post Second World War. And
we'll get to all of that in a bit, I think.
That made it more heated.
That made it even more heated. Let's just look at what Friedrich Merz said that caused a bit of the chaos. When Johan Vadeful came back, Friedrich Merz insisted that Syrians can go back to Syria because war is over. Let's just listen to that.
The basic point is this. The civil war in Syria is over, and the country now needs all its strength, especially Syrians themselves, to rebuild. That's why many will likely return from Germany voluntarily. We know that a large share of Syrians want to go back, and we will support that. We'll also help the country rebuild as quickly as possible.
So, maybe just for everybody who hasn't been following this, civil war in Syria broke out in 2011. Then Bashar al-Assad was toppled in 2024. Now, the country is being led by Ahmed al-Ashara, who is a former Syrian rebel and is now the interim president of the country, and Germany wants close relationships with him. Aya, what does the country look like at the moment? Is war over in Syria?
Well, there's war, the civil war, the fighting, the sort of intense phases of fighting are certainly over, but that doesn't mean that there aren't sporadic outbreaks of violence around the country. It certainly doesn't mean that the country is completely safe. And there is, as one would expect, an enormous amount of destruction of infrastructure across the country. I mean, the second you start driving out of Damascus, anywhere, I took a bit of a road trip with my team this time around, where we drove from Damascus all the way up to Idlib. So that's the region in the northwest where the current government, the former rebel government, actually comes from. And we wanted to go there to try and understand where that particular movement comes from anyway. But we made a point to stop everywhere on the road. And you're really looking at a drive from the capital all the way to the northwest. And every time you come out of the car, you see images that are not dissimilar from the images that we saw Johan Vadeful standing at during his trip. He was in a suburb around Damascus. The civil war had many different phases, different fighting between many different groups. external intervention. It doesn't mean that life is impossible there, but if you are a Syrian family who's been in the country since 2015, you have a job.
You mean this country?
Yeah,
Germany.
This country in Germany since 2015 or even later. And you have a family. Let's say you have two children. Let's say they're in school. You've done your vocational training. You have a job. Even if you wanted to, participate in the rebuilding of your home country, which is a very legitimate, I think, for people even here in Germany to be talking about, would you uproot your family and take them and go back and live in these conditions? I mean, of course, we're talking about policy. We're talking about large numbers. We're talking about a historical event that is very controversial. But we're also talking about individual people and individual choices and individual families with biographies. And since the chancellor particularly emphasized this idea of voluntary return, it's not an impossible idea. There are various programs in the Western world that incentivize people to return back. They give them money, they give them funds to maybe start a business and so on. But this might not be appealing to everybody. And voluntary return is something very, very different from forcible deportation.
And that's the perfect point to bring in Daniel, because mm-hmm. you can help us break it all down, Daniel. Badaful and Merz caused a discussion. We need to understand what kind of a level of return from Syria are we actually talking about here? Can you break that down for us?
Well, if we look at the international developments, we actually see massive returns. More than 1 million Syrians have returned, mainly from Turkey, Lebanon, and Iraq. While from Germany, we have seen hardly any voluntary returns, only 2,500 under these programs mentioned a second ago. So there are very many returns, but few from Germany. And that, of course, has to do with economic reasons, social reasons, and also the family reasons mentioned. But also, let's also maybe break it a bit down, because we are not only talking about families. We are not only talking about people like we have a job. We have more than 1 million Syrians in Germany. And it would be totally unrealistic if the government expected that they can forcibly return in return flights, deportations, more than 10 or 15,000 people. That would not be feasible under the German legal and administrative system. And also when it comes to voluntary returns, I don't think it's realistic to expect hundreds of thousands to return to Syria. But what the government probably wants and what it also needs from a political communications perspective, it needs individual cases, visible individual cases, and certain numbers of returns. And that can be achieved also from a legal perspective, because the civil war is mainly over and it now all boils down to an individual assessment. From which region is someone coming from? Are there family members which can support him, her upon return? Does he have some very basic professional experience which allows him to find a job as a laborer on a daily basis? And it's not required that this person has a very good life. It's just required that he doesn't fear hunger, that he has some sort of shelter where he can live, and that he has very basic medical training and medical support. And that is something which the first German courts are saying is available, especially for young male, which do not have families in Germany, who are healthy and who are able to work. And that is probably the group we are talking about first. And it's not only young male, it's also members of the Sunni majority. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the coming weeks, months, we see the first return flights of maybe 200-300 people to Syria. And we talk about this specific subgroup, and they will focus primarily on people who have committed crimes and also people who are unemployed. And let's also face it, we have 7,000 Syrian doctors, but we also have many Syrians who do not manage to find a job, who do not have professional experience, who do not have done professional training in Germany, although they could have done so.
And there are two problems with this politically. First of all, those who are committed of heavy crimes, those are very low figures, but they take up a lot of room in the public debate. But I was told it's less than 100 who would be these high profile cases, way less. Then the more fundamental question, I think, I agree with Aya, if my family was here in safety, and I would think more than twice about whether to bring my family into ruins. The question is what the legal status is. Yeah. And the question is also, first of all, about the legality, but also about public acceptance. What does asylum mean? What does subsidiary protection mean? And particularly in facing the AfD, which was on a par with the conservative CDU of Chancellor Merz recently several times over, there's a need to justify the current asylum system when you argue this is temporary. This is sheltering people from active conflict and they will go back. Now they need to prove that people will go back. Otherwise, any kind of future case of asylum or they will also be the government who presides over whoever makes it into the country stays. And that is the breeding ground for a further rise of the far-right alternative for Germany.
And I think that shows the lack of a functioning migration system like we have in other countries, where you have a green card system where it's very clear you can make it into the country and you can settle if you want to under certain conditions. Like Michaela says, we've got a number of people who are given protection. And like you say, we've got a conflict now with all of these people having been here for several years. And with Friedrich Merz arguing war is over in Syria, and some people are even saying, well, are we really sure about that? So not even all the courts will agree if these people then took their own cases in case they were on the deportation list to court. Some courts might argue, no, actually, you're right. We can't guarantee you're a Christian, for example, that you're not going to be persecuted. So the lack of clarity for the status of Syrians is a big issue, right, Aya?
Global business isn't just charts and suits.
It's a messy, unpredictable soap opera set on a global stage.
Hi, I'm Daniel.
And I'm Cassandra.
If you think the economy is boring, you've been watching the wrong show.
In our weekly podcast, The Dip, we'll help you connect the dots.
That's DW's The Dip, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, because they're not a monolith, like neither in their legal status, neither in their, you know, ethnic background, neither in the level of persecution that they could face should they return back home. Just the note about the civil war ending. I mean, one could argue that active, violent conflict had stopped in Syria for a while, even as the Assad regime was still in place. But there were still arguments like people, if they were to return, they would be, you know, persecuted by the system. Some people are activists, journalists, you know, they belong to particular groups where they can be targeted, certain minorities, etc. So he is correct. The fighting is over, but that doesn't mean that the threat for everybody is over. And it certainly doesn't mean that the country is in a place where people can go back and live well. And I think the point that Daniel made is a really, really good one, is that you do see these large numbers returning from the surrounding countries like Turkey, Lebanon, mm-hmm. Because conditions there are terrible compared to how they are in Germany. I think a big part of the debate, though, going back to, you know, the space or the life this statement seems to have taken, you can't take this out of the context of Friedrich Merz's promises to try and, you know, curb the influence of the AfD. Even when he was in the opposition, he did make this promise that he would halve their popularity, correct me if I'm wrong, their numbers, that he would bring the numbers of AfD supporters down, that he would bring them to the CDU by taking a different course that Merkel says. And so a lot of this debate and a lot of this rhetoric coming from Merz's side and his party is also, quite frankly, dog whistling to the far right and trying to, in some ways, adopt some of the things that the AfD has been saying about Merkel's migration policy. But what we've observed is that somehow, miraculously, instead of taking away from their popularity, it's adding to their popularity because it's making these statements that have been coming out of the AfD for years more normal. So if
and it's
you
a big
were
risk.
A supporter of the AfD but, and you've been told that, you know, what you're saying is perhaps racist, unacceptable, now you're seeing a party, the CDU party, a big tent party, adopting very, very, very similar rhetoric. So I think the question is this really the best policy or the best rhetoric to try and limit the influence of the AFD. I mean, these big cases that Daniel is talking about, I understand the point, they would be visible and maybe they would show that the government is doing something. But is it really fulfilling that promise from the CDU that it's going to try and curb the influence
of
the AFD?
I just want to caution that. I think that you can have the perspective that you feel that this is similar messaging to the Alternative for Germany, but having a stance and basically Friedrich Merz disagreed with Angela Merkel also on the migration issue in 2015, way before the AfD skyrocketed off the back
and
of
Chancellor 2015. Scholz made the same comments so, that deportations
and it didn't
help
the SPD when he said we are going to deport im
No, but there is a generally different stance when it comes to migration and asylum. So I would caution that. What I do see also as feeding into the arguments of the far-right Alternative for Germany is that there is such caution and that so few Syrians want to return because they can turn it into an argument saying, look, the German state has been too generous. Once people are here, they don't want to leave again, even when there is peace. So I really want to caution anyone to see anything that is that insists on asylum not just being an individual right, which it is in Germany, but also a temporary status, to see that as one-on-one with AfD policy.
And we need to bring Daniel back into the discussion because, of course, it's still, whether it feeds into the far-right rhetoric or not, it is a risky statement for a chancellor to make, that deportations are going to happen on a big scale and that people are going to return voluntarily in large numbers at this particular moment in time. Right, Daniel? Break it down. How many people will realistically leave Germany who are from Syria and who are here at the moment?
It seems to me that's all a question of political communication. I mean, large numbers, it can mean many things, but I think it would be unrealistic to expect that we would have more than 1,000 or 2,000 forced returns, forced deportations to Syria of criminals or young men who do not work, because quite simply the German legal system and also the administrative capacities are not there to proceed more cases. All these individuals will be allowed to go to court before they are sent back to Syria. And these court cases take, in each individual case, 1.5 years on average. So this takes time. And if they start repealing the protection status of tens of thousands of people, the courts would be overwhelmed and the procedures would even take longer. So there are limits in terms of legal procedure and administrative capacities which can be implemented. So forced return, more than 2,000-3,000 per year, are probably not realistic. And voluntary returns, that of course depends also on how the situation in Syria develops. And that's also depends on whether the German state manages to have some incentives, but maybe also some sticks, which say, if you do not return voluntarily, if you belong to the Sunni majority, if you do not have small children, if you do not work in Germany, we will sooner or later start repealing your status. But if I may briefly come back to that AfD rhetoric questions. I mean, you will find statements by Angela Merkel, which say if the war is over, these people will return. So I think it really has to do also with the acceptance of the right to asylum. And also from a rule of law perspective, citizens are always told we have to allow these people in the country because we have a right to asylum. And if they are in need of protection, we have to give it to them. But if now in the future, with regard to specific subgroups of the Syrian population living in Germany, first the authorities and then the courts decide that there's actually no longer legal protection for these subgroups of the Syrian populations. It's also problematic from a rule of law perspective if these decisions of authorities and courts have no consequences in practice. If they do not have these consequences, at least in some visible cases, the acceptance of the right to asylum, which has already eroded massively, will probably disappear completely and the AfD will benefit.
But as a migration researcher, Daniel, doesn't that mean that Germany needs to now identify certain conditions for Syrians who are currently not in, you know, who are currently under protective status, but who want to stay, but who haven't been given that status yet? What would be the recommendations? I know that you're not a political counselor to any of the political parties, but what needs to happen so that more of those people whose status is currently unclear and who probably might have to go to court and then overburden the German systems, etc., so that they can find clarity?
I would really love if politicians stopped being so simple, like many people have to return or everyone has to stay, because that's also what you're hearing in the media from green politicians who say, well, no deportations to Syria, even if the courts say in individual cases that can be done. So I think we really need to break down this black and white debate. And I would personally love if politicians say everyone who works, who doesn't depend on social benefits, can stay, irrespective of whether he or she belongs to a group who could theoretically be forced to return. And second, I would say families with children will probably stay anyway. So, and that takes out 40, 50% of the Syrians. And then with the rest, you have to start distinguish. So I would say also as an incentive, if you find a job, if you do stop relying on social benefits, which 30 or 40% of the Syrians are still doing, you are totally safe. I think that's the kind of messaging politicians should do. Then also you have subgroups, especially young men who do not work and possibly some even commit crimes. They should then be the first group who are sent back unless they belong to a minority which is currently still facing persecution or other serious harm.
And this is what the Conservatives haven't done. They haven't created these categories because they also know it's an individual right. It will go to court anyway. And they know they cannot enforce these categories if they create them. And particularly those who are the tough talking ones also in the Conservative camp who I've spoken to kind of, you know, off the record, they also tell me, look, we know we can't, you know, we can't force people back in large numbers anyway. And that's why there's now momentum to give Syria a real chance in terms of development assistance and really create conditions on the ground. You will see Germany being particularly forthcoming in trying to help to create these conditions. And that's also why we see Syria's interim leader come to Berlin very soon. We don't know the exact date yet.
And that is, of course, very interesting because he is a former Syrian rebel. He was labeled a terrorist not so long ago. Now he's leading that interim government and people are treating him like he's a, you know, valid president. And so the hand has been stretched out and he is going to come to Berlin. What is going to happen to Syria? Isn't there also a risk that those 7,000 doctors that we've talked about out of a million people who have Syrian roots here in Germany, that especially those people are going to sort of say, OK, I'll try and see if I can help rebuild my country, that they might then be the first to leave voluntarily?
I think just before I get into that, I think exactly that lack of differentiation is what I meant when I said that there's a lot of dog whistling to the far right coming from the CDU right now, because they're not making a differentiation between the different groups and are just saying we're going to forcibly deport in large numbers, knowing full well that that is neither logistically possible nor is it legally possible either. And that is, I think, really the issue. If they kept repeating again and again that this is about, you know, upholding the asylum system and that, of course, with any wave of massive migration, there is the possibility for people to return, but that the way of them returning is not limited to forcible deportation, because that obviously, that's my observation, is what they feel people want to hear so that they can, you know, allegedly pull them back from the far right.
I promise not to have a semantic debate, but the forced deportation is always in reference to criminal offenders. And the term used is to send people back in large numbers. So the term deportation was.
But we know that the number. But then it's dishonest, because when they say we're going to return people in large numbers and what they mean are the criminals, the criminals are not a large number.
Deportation is, that means you can be also then be previously arrested. These are people who are going against their will.
Right.
And sending people back in large numbers, there is a political recognition that this is simply not going to be feasible. And I think what you will see over the coming weeks and months is them trying to create conditions where they can incentivize people. There's already premiums paid for people to, you know, to go back. That's also been criticized by the far right. And actually, I'd be interested, Daniel, too. I mean, what is your prediction?
Yeah.
What do you think you're going to see?
Well, I think they will develop a plan. Mm-hmm. I think they have been working in the background. I would be surprised if they hadn't. But they have not publicly communicated a plan. My intuitive guess would be that the interior minister wanted to have the first flights of 60, 70 people, and then he would come up with some more liberal policies in the slipstream of this visibly hard measure. And because if he now says we have more generous reintegration programs, so not only giving one, not at the moment, each person gets a return ticket, airplane usually, plus 1,000, plus 200 for the travel, plus possible medical cost for the next 2 months. If they, for instance, increase that or give extra money for professional training back in Syria and to start business or other initiatives, this would be perceived as weak unless they have some visible, hard, tough measures as well. And then they might also start allowing these go and see visits, as they are called in English, that people are officially authorized to go to Syria for 2 or 3 weeks to check the conditions there.
But they've already said that they're not going to do that, Daniel. They've already said that they've looked into that because other countries have been working with that system and that they have decided against it. So you think that is going to change, that actually the current German government is going to allow Syrians to go back for 2 weeks or so to check out whether their house is still standing in the region where they're from and then come back and not lose their status, their protective status here? Is that what you're predicting?
First, it would be my recommendation. And second, I think they will do it in the future once they have done the first visible hard measures. And they will do so for a simple reason. The debate over the past few days has now created a level of expectation, which is so massively high that the government and especially the Ministry of the Interior must be really pragmatic because they must now somehow produce some numbers of forced returns, but then also on voluntary returns. And they will understand that they cannot reasonably expect Syrians to return to a country where they haven't been for 10 years. So I would personally guess that such initiatives will come forward.
I feel like we're all saying the same thing. I'm sorry to keep going back to this point because I really want to make sure that I'm not misunderstood. You said, Michaela, that when they say we're going to deport in large numbers, they're talking about the criminals that, you know, should be and are legally allowed to be deported. But we know that these are not large numbers. Do you see what I'm saying? And that's why it creates the false expectation that there's going to be thousands and thousands returning every year. But even if they succeed in deporting all of the criminals, these are not large numbers.
No, they're not large numbers. And I think that's exactly what Daniel Toom has just mapped out, that is the problem. I just wanted to make sure that we don't send a message where people understand that there's an announcement that basically whole families are going to be shoved onto planes. Nobody is saying that.
But it's vague enough that...
It's vague enough. I think it's partly a translation issue between German and English.
But when Chancellor Merz says, you know, large numbers are going to be expected to leave, I think for many people that are living here that are outside of the category of the criminality, people living off of the social system, could feel like that's targeted to them.
No, but again, they've maneuvered themselves into expectations.
He also said deportations in large numbers. You know, we had that very similar debate. So I don't think it's a question of the Conservatives and the AfD. And I think that warrants an entire new podcast episode. But to come back on this, to this topic here, we still need to talk about two things. One, is Vardafol stable in his job? That's one. And the other one is the outrage that was caused by his comments that apparently he made in the parliamentary group meeting where he compared the situation in Syria to Germany after the Second World War, 1945, saying that the situation in Syria was worse. why was there such an outcry, Michaela, about those comments?
Well, I mean, we had a previous discussion about this because I spoke to several people who took part in that gathering, which is behind closed doors, and they felt... Some felt that Vadafur had talked himself into a corner, that he was actually already fine, that Maths had backed him, and that he should have then just said three sentences and sat down again. Instead, he went into this long explanation how well he knows the region and how what he saw was worse than Germany post 45. And frankly, I don't understand why there was such huge outrage, but this crossed the line. And then I thought, okay, maybe this is depending on which age group within that camp, but that offended a lot of people across different ages.
Maybe Daniel can help.
Yeah.
Daniel, do you understand the outcry over Johann Vadefuhl's comments that Syria looks worse than Germany in 1945?
Any comparison to 1945 is always difficult in Germany, but my take had been like it was described a minute ago. I think it had to do with the dynamism of the meeting. That's what I have heard or read in the media. But if I may come back to this open-ended communication, on the one hand, you could say that it is a strategy, but my perception is it's more or less a lack of strategy. They don't really know what they will do with Syrians in Germany. They don't have a plan. I mean, over the past months, they didn't really talk about it at all publicly. So my perception is they really lack a plan. They do not know what to do. And that partly explains also the open-ended, diffuse communication, because they don't actually know what to do.
I spoke to somebody very high level within the Conservative CDU who admitted that it was a problem that they hadn't created these categories, that they had not mapped out who they mean. But they, of course, also know that legally it's you know, you can politically create categories, but that doesn't mean you can legally act upon them. This will have to pass these individual rights. I just reminded myself that before Merz became chancellor, in a press conference, I asked him whether the individual right to asylum, which is in the German basic law, it's in the constitution, would be off limits for him. And he said, nothing is off limits. Mm. And I really wonder whether this could become a moment where that gets called into question again, because there is maximum pressure on the Conservative CDU. The AfD can you know, basically just push them to the brink and say, okay, so you said large numbers are going to leave. It's not happening. Mm-hmm. And it's the Conservative CDU-led coalition that has to make it happen.
And the AfD are in a comfortable situation.
They don't have to do anything.
They can just sit and watch. At the moment that they would know how to do it and how to deport these people.
But then also, and correct me if I'm wrong, the CDU is an established party that has a long, deep, rich history in Germany, respecting the basic law and so on. But mm-hmm. the AfD is a disruptive party. So it's much, much easier for them to say, like, yeah, hey, we don't like the system. We're going to tear it completely apart. And we might even think of a situation where we can really en masse take away the protective status of people. It's much easier for the AfD to say something.
It's
like
always
that.
Easier for the opposition if you're not in government. But they too would need a 2/3 majority to change a constitution, which there's no way they would get it. But they can just sit there and make promises this, yeah, because they don't have to act on them anyway.
Yeah. But I do want to end this episode with a question whether Johann Vadefuhl is going to stay on as foreign minister. Yes or no? What do you all three think? Michaela, you start.
He's stable. He's fine. He does have the full backing of the chancellor. He's actually a friend of his. There are clearly people who are out to get him, but it won't happen.
Yeah, what do you think?
I think I agree with Michaela. And we really have to, again, go back and look at what this was. This was a state official. He has a duty to describe what he saw. That's also the purpose of these visits. He is a representative of Germany going to visit a country and give at least partially an evaluation of the reality. And that is what he did. The fact that it then took this other political, you know, the debate itself and the statements had this whole other life is, I think, more a commentary on how sensitive this topic is in Germany. Merz's statements, I do feel, I stand by it, were directed at more a domestic audience, given the rise of the AfD and where the CDU is, and his own personal, not his personal, but sort of career trajectory to try and undo what his predecessor Merkel, his party predecessor, not in the chancellery, did, and that it was
allegedly opening the arms to
all
Syrians.
Well, not closing the doors at the very least, I think, is the technical.
Opening the borders when, in fact,
but what she did was actually she just didn't close them, but the borders were open anyway because it is the EU and there are no borders. There are, of course, national borders.
This year, we might do an episode on that.
We missed the anniversary. It was in August, so I think it was. You know, it was a pretty innocuous statement that, for the purposes of how the debate is run in Germany and how it's conducted in Germany, just I think took way, way, way bigger space than it really ever should have. And I don't know if that disqualifies somebody from, you know, finishing his term as minister. He didn't do anything particularly wrong.
Okay, Daniel, what's your prediction? Is Johann Wadephul going to stay on?
Oh, he didn't do anything specifically wrong, but it was inevitable that this debate would come up sooner or later. I would personally guess if they manage to organize a single return flight with 30, 40 people in the coming weeks or 2 or 3 months, probably he's perfectly fine.
And any last thoughts, Daniel, anything that we haven't mentioned that you would like to add to this discussion? Because, of course, there are so many factors. Maybe we've missed the one big question.
I fear that the debate over the past weeks has really created a public expectation which the government can only miss. So this might turn out to be one of the episodes where, again, the AfD is finally benefiting.
Thanks very much for watching, everybody. We'll probably do another episode once the German government has actually written up a plan on how to deal with the situation. And for now, thanks very much for watching and listening to Berlin Briefing, to this episode. Make sure that you subscribe to our newsletter that comes out every week, once a week, and gives you more reports from Germany and the insider details. So thanks very much. Send us a note and a comment. Till next time.